If you imagine a kid right out of high school starting out their career in the military, what kind of advice do you have for them?
I guess my advice would be take risks. Take smart risks. Take risks that are relevant to your position. Take risks to ask the questions that you don't know if you should or not. Take risks to volunteer for something that you don't think you'll be like accepted for. Take risks for growth. The worst thing you can do is just step back and let things come to you. So take risks to grow, and then you'll benefit. The people around you will benefit. The wing will benefit. And that's what we need. We need people punching above their weight class. And you do that by taking those risks.
Welcome to Black Snake Bites, the official podcast of the 122nd Fighter Wing. Your hosts are Lieutenant Rogers, myself, and Senior Master Sergeant Kaiser. Our guests today have an end and a beginning to their careers and futures. With 43 years of fighter pilot experience between them and multiple deployments overseas, Colonel Joshua Wagner and Colonel Scott Boatwright have been charged with leading the Black Snakes to face the unique and unpredictable challenges that lie ahead. As Colonel Wagner is promoting to retirement and Colonel Boatwright takes over as the 122nd Fighter Wing Commander, we are excited to have you both join us on Black Snake Bites, and we cannot wait to see where this conversation goes. Thank you both for coming today.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. Thanks, Leslie. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colonel Wagner and Colonel Boatwright, you have both had similar backgrounds in the military as leaders and as fighter pilots. Both of you started out enlisted. Both of your fathers served in the military. You've flown the same fighter jets. You've deployed together. So starting with you, Colonel Wagner, as you look back over your career, what are some of those memories or events that were the most formative to your career? And if these stories include Colonel Boatwright, that's great, too.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say they're basically twins at this point.
Except for I'm promoting to a new job, you're promoting to retirement.
Yeah, there is that.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, well, that's great. So for me, I'd say like the biggest events were probably the most memorable. So like out of high school, deciding that this is what I wanted to do and enlisting. I mean, it was September 7th, 1995 in Tucson, Arizona. My parents were there. Raised my hand and then went off to training that next summer and like throwing on the uniform for the first time, like figuring out, you know, what it was to be an airman while I was at basic training, and then coming home and having my parents meet me at the airport whenever I was like dragging my duffel bag from training. And that whole process sticks out. The next would be getting commissioned. My first, you know, flight in an Air Force airplane was on my birthday, November 27th. And then how that all played out over time, coming home after UPT and figuring out what the squadron was all about. Like each step, like incremental step in the progression from like a dude that wanted to do it to the guy that's now hanging it up is memorable. And the most important thing is really not the events, it's the people that you shared them with. So like Tug coming back from pilot training and the F-16 RTU when we were in Terre Haute. And then that was really, it wasn't the first time we met, but it was the first time that we got to like hang out and spend some time together and like chase our careers over the last 20 plus years. So like the people that you spend it with are really the most memorable thing when it comes to those like milestones in your career.
Yeah, very similar. So I grew up, I was the youngest. I have an older brother, older sister. My dad flew F-4s, active duty, then got in the Guard in St. Louis. And so he moved to St. Louis the year I was born in 79. And that's how I learned about the Guard. Because I remember we have family Christmas pictures with me, my two siblings on the wing of an F-4, but grew up with it, thought it was neat. I wouldn't say I wanted to do that when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. My brother did, and he went off to the Air Force Academy, and I realized that was not for me. So then I'm like, all right, I do want, this is a career I want in the military. I do want to fly fighters. And so I enlisted, and same deal, sworn to the St. Louis, Missouri Air National Guard at 17 with my parents' approval. Did my senior year at high school, then went off to basic tech school as a crew chief on F-15s, and they paid for my college, and I went down that path, similar to the recruiting opportunities we have today. Like, I lived it back when it was first kind of a new thing, when college education was free tuition through the Air National Guard was brand new, and it worked out well. And then, yeah, I met Deuce when I got hired in Terre Haute, and it's funny, our careers have separated throughout. Stayed in touch the whole time. So he went to Springfield, Ohio, I believe, as a F-16 IP. I transferred up here when we were BRAC'd out of F-16s in Terre Haute. And then he came back, and then I went to St. Louis, and then we found ourselves back here together again.
You just couldn't get away from each other. Is that what it was?
Holy cow.
Twins,
like, I left states. Like, ran away from one another. That's actually a funny story. So when Tug decided to go to St. Louis, it was a drill Sunday. He just kind of made the announcement. We realized that was the last time that he was going to be around for a while. And we were done flying and everything for the day. And it was kind of quiet and dreary out. So, like, we snuck out the front door quietly, went to a local establishment in town, cracked a beer, looked down at the end of the bar, and it was actually one of our chaplains. He beat us to it. So he was at the bar before we showed up, and ended up, like, he was actually good to have a chaplain there and kind of commiserate with us as we were figuring out, like, how to figure out this thing, you know, from two different states and what it meant for our families and trying to figure out what he was going to do for his family and how to get back to Fort Wayne eventually so he could keep flying.
Yeah, because when I was a lieutenant, I was single, and Deuce's wife, Andrew, always had me over for dinner. So, like, we've been close there. And it's funny. So when I left flying here, I think it's 2017 is when I went to the 131st Bomb Wing in Missouri. And I remember Gus Noel at the time was maybe vice wing, deputy wing now, whatever. And he's like, "Hey, Tug, like, there'll be a job when you come back." I'm like, "No. I'm not coming back to fly, and I'm never going to move back here. Like, I am going to St. Louis, and that is the end of my career in the military." And here I am.
Back here.
Several years later, not only flying here, but living here.
Yeah. Like,
we're here in Fort Wayne. We're,
Andrea's house for dinner, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. So,
absolutely.
I was the married guy. So the one guy hired before me, and then the three guys hired after me in Terre Haute were all single, and we were all like plus or minus 2 or 3 years of each other. So she was like the den mother, and she'd have people over on Thursdays and fix them dinner and stuff. So, like, that's the kind of, like,
our only home cooked meal unless I went back to see my parents.
Well, and it's Andrea. She's awesome.
She's pretty all right.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what did you guys both do enlisted?
As a crew chief on F-15, so maintenance for the first 4 or 5, whatever years it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I was maintenance plans and scheduling. So I worked in the mock. Primarily did some of the backroom stuff, maintaining flight records and things like that. But for the majority of the time, I was in mock until, I made staff. And then, like, 4 months later, I went off to get commissioned. So
that's cool.
I made the ranks. Honestly, if this flying thing hadn't worked out, I would have stuck through and, like, hopefully retired a chief or something. I loved it. I wasn't going anywhere unless I was going to fly. And I got the opportunity. So,
yeah. So, Colonel Wagner, after you swore in as wing commander in 2022, what challenges did you face while establishing your own identity and vision?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just talking to one of the old timers, and he was saying, like, this must be the worst time to be a wing commander with everything that's going on. And I have, like, a 180-out perspective on that. I think this is the perfect time to be a wing commander. There's no, like, path. Like, there are so many changes that you can look at the mission, look at the airmen, look at your capabilities, and then kind of, like, support each of those three priorities to get after what's next. So for me, it would have been super boring to just roll into a wing that was flying and had been flying, it was going to be flying, and you don't have those challenges of, like, solving problems, because I get bored super easy. But in this case, there's no time to get bored because we have so many things going on. It's been fun. And fortunately, the first big event after I took command was the air show. And after spending a few days at the air show that Tug put together, the message that I got was, it's amazing what you people do, but I had no idea you were here. And that was from, like, movers and shakers in the community and people that could play a big role in what we were expecting to do over the next couple of years. So we took it as a challenge to, like, get those people involved. Like, we don't want to be the best kept secret in Fort Wayne.
Right.
So we put a lot of time and effort into doing that. And again, it's because things are so... things are in flux. Everything's changing, which is, it's good for me. I think it's the perfect time to be the wing commander. The goal over the last, you know, several months has been to tie things up in a bow and drop it off at Tug's front door and, like, put him in a position where he can run with what we've been doing and change it however he sees fit. But,
well, yeah, you teed him up for another air show.
Yeah, absolutely. So
air show. It's the only way to start.
I'm out. See ya. Tug, what do you think?
That works.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And I hear, Colonel Wagner, you don't like rules anyway. So if they would have put rules on you, it'd have been like, oh, well, we're just going to do it.
I'm not a fan of rules, and gray is my favorite color. So, you know, it's a good opportunity now because you can operate in that gray space between what we were doing, what we will be doing, and, like, chart a future for the success of our airmen.
I appreciate that gray area because to me that means we can take calculated risks.
Absolutely. And I expect you to. You have to.
Right.
Yeah. Pursue until apprehended. I believe Chief of Staff said that, right?
Yeah, proceeding until apprehended.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
One of my mottos.
Yep.
Yeah.
Colonel Wagner, is there any long-term goals for the base that someone started before you that you knew you wanted to finish?
The conversion, that was in law in 2017, and it's going to continue like through Tug's role as the wing commander and then beyond. It's going to take a long time to get the jets and the people ready to execute the mission in the future. So that was like the big mandatory thing, but really it boils down to mission and the airmen. And General Stoller did a great job of that. His focus was a little different and his delivery was too. And I expect that Tug's will be different than mine. It better be because mine's not that great. But he let it be known that like we have to get after the mission. You have to take care of the airmen. And the only thing I really inserted was like that innovation part. Like the roles are changing for the airmen and the mission is changing every day. So we have to find innovative ways of thinking and executing to make sure that those two mandatory, like no fail parts of what we do, the mission and the people, are successful. So for me, hopefully I can hand off something to Tug and then he can change it, he can alter it, he can make it his own, but we can still get after the priorities of the people and the mission.
Colonel Boatwright, I think this rolls really well into the next question. What does it mean to you to take on the responsibility of wing commander?
A little bit overwhelming, of course, right? But the other part of it is I've been a part of this wing off and on for quite some time. And I think I have a good relationship with a lot of senior leaders on this base and even down through squadron commanders, where what I hope is that they can walk up to me knowing it's an open door, unless it's closed, right? But it's an open door. If there's something bothering, but they're like, I have an idea. I think this needs to change. By all means, come in. Let's talk about it. There's a lot of times I remember when I was a squadron commander, I'm like, why are we doing this? And I'd have a conversation with whether it be General Stoller at the time or whoever. And I see that other, maybe that's more strategic reason why, or just the wing level why that I didn't see at the squadron. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And I think having been in those relationships, having kind of been a part going up from squadron to group, not a wing, I think I've seen a little bit from each side where I'm like, yeah, this is why. And I have a better understanding and answer as to why that is. So in case there's questions on why we're going down a path in the wing, like, here's a reason. And a lot of times it's, this is what the wing needs, period. Like, that's a tough one. But overall, as being a wing commander here, appreciative of it. And I think we know what the end goal is, and it's a jet. And I think that's the biggest thing I want to get to the airmen, is I don't care what your AFSC is, it is directly related to that airplane, period, dot. And I think that is why we have to get back to the basics. You have to be good at your job, and what you do directly affects that airplane. And at the end of the day, like, if that airplane cannot get where it needs to be anywhere in the world for that combatant commander, like, we fail as a wing, and everybody plays a role. And like, how do I implement that, and how do I help that, and really just support that, whether it be support their innovativeness, that's the word, but like, just put as many resources as I can behind the individuals to go forth and prosper and try to deal with the other, not the queep, right? It's a word we use, but it's not a good word. But try to tabletop some of that. I think right now it's AFSC focus, get the airplane where it needs to be, and like, that's our number one goal.
I think that's such an important message for people around the base to hear, because if you work, I don't know, finance came to mind, but anyone who kind of works behind a computer every day and they're not experiencing the jet, you know, they're not working on the jet like maintenance is, or they're not flying the jet, that can get lost.
Right. Like, we'll just take the railroad track. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want it known that everyone on the east side of the railroad track has as much of a direct correlation to that airplane being airborne and deploying almost as people on the west side, frankly. And I think that is lost. Not with everyone, but I think it is with some. Like, they are integral to the mission.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to ask, too, what does a handoff look like between the two of you? As incoming, outgoing, what's a good handoff look like, and what would you expect other leaders
drop,
to be
isn't
doing?
That, what, isn't that the term? A mic drop?
Yeah.
Walk out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be a dot on the horizon. No, you know what?
Here's your binders. Good luck. You're
going to be the keys of the office before the change of command. And
Fortunately, okay. I don't think it'll be a huge deal. Like, some of the queep, like Tug talked about, some of those small things that are inherent to the job and the team that we work with every day, like this, the CSS and the exec, like, some of that he'll have to pick up, just like how the sausage is made, because I didn't know about it before I got into the position, and General Stoller did a good job of handing that off to me. But the big stuff, he already knows. We have a strong team from top to bottom, but we encourage honesty. Like, that's really the only character trait that's important to me, because honesty allows for trust, and trust allows for success. And then if you build upon those things, they build upon each other. So it has to be You have to have honesty to begin with. And sometimes it's uncomfortable. We've had conversations or said things in meetings about the organization or about how people are leading their portion of the organization that's been like, I don't know, confrontational. But if you're not willing to have those conversations, then you're going to be kind of stifled as you grow. But as far as like the mission, I'm not worried about that at all, because I would trust anybody in our leadership team to take care of that. I know in a previous podcast, you talked to Chief Dixon about the runaway bus, and I truly believe that and live by it. So I'd make sure in any way that I can as the commander to keep people informed so that they can take action in my absence. And hopefully that'll make his transition to that office a lot easier. Or yeah. I'll just drop the mic and disappear, one or the other.
Right. Yeah, and then interactions with local people off base in the community, because we need community support. We need community buy-in. And we've gone through that the month or two leading up to the change of command. That's taking cool. over once it was officially announced, right? And then we went through and made sure that I knew the individuals that really support the base, that we rely on, that we need to know. And so that portion was fairly seamless.
Again, I'm not losing any sleep over what's next for the wing or for Tug at all, because the team's in place. He's informed, and I truly believe they're going to be successful.
I like you mentioned honesty. I just heard a quote that's starting to trickle down, and it's honest conflict versus dishonest tension. And I appreciate that. Like,
yeah.
Just get it out on the table, talk about it, ask a question.
You know, it's funny. That's near and dear to our hearts, but it's normal coming up in a fighter squadron. Because I can go sit there with IPs we've hired off active duty, with a lieutenant going through an upgrade, maybe as a flight lead, and I'm like number four as the O6. That they lead me around, right? But when I make mistakes, it's called out. Like, no, the gloves are off, the rank is off, and it's, Tug, you did this, why? Here's what you should have done. And we walk out of the debrief room, and there's no harm, no foul. Like, nobody cares. Like, thanks, tell me honest feedback, make me better. And that's reality. Or if we disagree on it, like, someone will pull up the pubs, the regs, and be like, this is why so-and-so is wrong, or this is, here's what it says in 3-1, here's what you should have done. It's like, cool, learned, lesson learned. And you walk out and it's okay.
Yeah.
No one's upset or no hurt feelings. Like, good feedback. I'm now better for having that discussion. And you move on. And
if you don't agree. It usually gives you reason to have a beer or something afterwards too.
Right.
So like in the meeting, it may be confrontational. Or in the debrief, like you just kind of take your lumps. And then afterwards, when you're building those relationships, like discussing things in a non-retributional environment, you can, again, be open and honest about what
I'm
you thought.
Curious, though. The chaplain had to come to one of y'all's debriefs, so I'm just saying.
Yeah. we need that kind of help,
there's
too.
There's times more than most. That. There's times it gets very heated.
Yeah.
But the end result is you're able to put your differences on the table. And through hopefully rationale and reasoning, you can come up with the right answer. And there's going to be a winner and a loser, and that's okay.
Right.
You're not going to win them all. It doesn't mean I don't like you. It doesn't mean you don't like me. It's the fact of life.
Right.
And that's the honest conflict.
Is that communication style something you learned throughout your career? Like, did you develop it over time?
I would say, you know, Tug, I don't think you have any choice.
Yeah.
Growing up in a fighter squadron, you're like the youngest guy in the room with the least amount of experience or knowledge, but you're expected to perform well beyond your capabilities.
Yeah.
So you work hard and you study and you spend way more hours like preparing than you actually do flying. And then you come back and the guy on the other side of the table just totally crushes you every day, over and over and over again. So you kind of build a callus around your heart. And then you, a couple years later, find yourself on the other side of the table. And you realize that guy wasn't mad at you. It's not that he didn't like you. He's just trying to make you better so that he can trust you, so that when you go to combat together, you know that he'll have your back and you'll have his. So taking what we learned, growing up in a fighter squadron and then applying that in a meeting of the expanded staff can be kind of surprising for those folks that didn't grow up that way. But like Chief Hoop and some of the other folks have really embraced it. And I think it pays off. Like, again, like Tug said, it's not that I don't like you. It's just we disagree.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we're all pulling the rope in the same direction. And we're all trying to help each other out to accomplish the same things. So I think in general, it's appreciated.
Yeah.
Honesty.
You don't go down the path of what the wing commander wants. You go down the path of what the wing needs.
Exactly.
Right. At the end of the day, if the decision or what I want to do is wrong, I expect MXG, MSG, Chief Hoop, to call me out and be like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. Like, Oh, noted. Thanks.
Well, and one of the biggest things I hear, too, is they care and they want to make you better. One of the number one reasons people are getting out of the Guard is first-line supervisors. Mm-hmm. Giving them feedback, they care.
Yeah.
They're trying to make you better.
Well, it's totally easier just to write somebody off or not give them that time that they deserve.
But if you feel like someone's writing you, they care.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Colonel Wagner, the last time you were on Black Snake Bites for the one-year anniversary episode, we talked about commander's intent. As you're going into retirement, how do you look back on your time as wing commander and those commander intent items that we talked about?
Yeah, so it's you get a pretty good grade when you write the test for yourself. Honestly, I tried to keep things simple because that's what I can understand. I follow a rule of threes, and then I try to make personally make poignant, short expectations for people. And if you concentrate on fly, fight, win, which means the mission, innovation, and people, you can kind of change what your focus is in those three areas as the situation changes. But when I look at fly, fight, win, we've done it. We successfully ended the 122nd's history with the A-10. We are in conversion to the F-16, and by most metrics, we're doing that well. Bottom line is we're flying jets when it matters. We are more innovative. This is an innovation. You know, we realized that the way we communicated didn't work. When I was growing up in Terre Haute and Tucson before that, we actually got a flyer in the mail before drill, and that is like right out. It was just junk mail that cost too much and nobody read. And then we kind of followed different paths, but we realized as a team that we have to reach the airmen in which the way they want to be reached. So we have apps, we have the podcast, we try to minimize email, we have more face-to-face interactions with them because that's what they want. And that's the way we're being innovative, and I think that's worked too. And then we've won. The airmen have won. The wing has won. We're still struggling with some stuff and we'll always struggle. But if I'm going to give myself a grade, it's really a grade for the wing and then evaluating those things. And this gets back to being a fighter pilot. Everything you do is evaluated, plus minus push. Did you do good? Did you do bad? Or could you do better? Like, you did okay, but it wasn't the best. So that's the way I try to evaluate my daily performance in the corner office. Like, what did I do good? What did I do bad? And what can I do better tomorrow? And then I think if you just concentrate on those three priorities of the people, innovation, and the mission, and then you honestly, again, evaluate how you did day to day, then, you know, over a year, 2 years, or 3 years, in this case, you can get a bigger picture of your performance.
You disagree with all that?
I echo pretty much all that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be measurable goals too, right? So we can go out the door right now and be like, all right, January, our goal is to be ready to go to combat. That'll be a minus. That's a fail. Like, we are not going to be ready to go to combat in the year of calendar year of 2025. Will not happen. We're going to be very close. We're not going to be there. It's like, okay. You have to, just the metrics have to be achievable.
So even though we're not going to go to combat in 25, we are preparing. So in 2025, there are things going on that will help us. Some say it's aggressive. I think it's the perfect right of rigor, though, if you both want to talk about that. We are going somewhere.
There's something to be said for taking these airplanes to another location, flying them on a ramp that we don't own, that doesn't have our own hangar, everything that we have here in Fort Wayne, and to make it work as if we were deployed.
Right.
I mean, it's a small version of that, right? But you have to be able to send the jets out. And if we don't do this, how are we going to know what we need, what we failed at?
But you there are some stressors just to going somewhere else and playing your game, right? So to hit the road with the jets probably before we're ready to be, like, super good, will provide some challenges that I personally would rather experience early on and find innovative solutions to the problems that happened. Than figuring out for the first time when it really matters.
Yeah.
So you gotta get out of here and you gotta try something different somewhere else. And that this is really the first opportunity to do it.
And you have competent squadron commanders that are at any point can wave the red flag and be like, we need another day. Pause, stop, like, this is going down a bad path. Like, give us another day, we'll get the jets out Friday, whatever it may be, right? And that's okay.
Yeah. Colonel Wagner, a lot of shop talk so far.
Yeah. What,
How are we going to get you out of that? What's next for retirement?
I don't know. Whatever.
Are you going to come back as Title V and be an advisor?
Oh, no. Uh-uh. Yeah, my phone will be on. He can call anytime he wants, but yeah, I'll go do airline stuff. I don't have any appreciable skills. I really can't do anything else. Tug said he didn't know if he wanted to fly till he was, 10, 11 years old. He got a little older and he figured it out, but that was the only thing I've ever wanted to do. I've been fortunate to do it as a fighter pilot for a long time, and the only negative to that is I can't do anything else. So I'll go fly for, the airlines and hopefully stay busy that way, take care of the family, probably be around more than they want me. I'm excited for it. I think it's great. It's just short of 30 years, so I think that's been a pretty good run.
Andrea, nice list for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the honey-do list will be substantial. But very good. I'm sure she earns it, so, and I owe it to her. But it's going to be great. We're excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for Colonel Boatwright as he's taking over that you haven't already given?
No, yeah. So we talk about stuff all the time. But I'd say the biggest thing is be willing to take a knee. So like we talked about it earlier in a meeting. We're sprinting a marathon. In conversion, as we're getting ready for what's next, as we're adapting to all the changes that are happening in the Air Force, in our community, at home, there's a lot going on, and at some point you got to take some time for yourself. I know he's going to trust the other people. I know he's going to be willing to let folks like do their jobs and give them guidance along the way if they need it. I know he's going to pick fights up and down the chain when he needs to help the people out and get the mission accomplished. But I think the thing I've probably done the worst is that I haven't taken time to like reflect or just chill or like take a time out, take a knee when I need to. That allows you to recharge and be better when you come back. And that goes to airmen too. Like we ask a lot of the airmen, and they're busy all the time, but sometimes they have to get busy taking care of themselves and their families and doing what's right, as opposed to just like charging through a brick wall over and over again every day.
And they keep doing it. They're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get out there and you walk around, they will do it for you over and over. So seeing you all take a knee, when I miss a drill, people ask me, where were you? I get to tell them that other half, be like, it's okay. And I think that's exactly. Just as important.
It's a great example of that.
Yeah, for sure.
So Colonel Boatwright, no pressure.
Yeah.
You've got some legacies ahead of you and then some after you. What message do you have for all the Black Snakes listening that are now in your charge?
I think it'd go back to kind of what I alluded to earlier. It's about that airplane. Everything we do, you should have any decision made. It's like, should we go this way or that way? What do we need to, not necessarily financially, like what should we spend money on? That should be on the airman. But also, like, keep the jet in mind. Like that somewhere when you're looking at a decision that's tough to make and you're asking questions like, which way should we go? Like that airplane should be somewhere on your mind. As far as, again, everything we do needs to, end result needs to be that jet. Not the pilot in it, not necessarily the maintenance on it. Like that airplane, because if that airplane can't get from here to where it needs to be when called on, like we fail. And yeah, everyone plays a role.
I agree too. Everyone plays a role. When I think about logistics of getting that aircraft fixed, up and running, going here, the whole base plays a role, whether you're checking the backs, you're loading, unloading, you're a packer, you're receiving.
PDF line, security forces, CE, like everybody is involved in that airplane.
Yeah, medical clearing people,
yes.
Maintenance working, up early, staying late. We had our lull, right? We had our little break. Now it's time to get back to business.
Well, we're going to close out this interview with you guys giving some advice to the newest Black Snake members. If you imagine a kid right out of high school starting out their career in the military, what kind of advice do you have for them? Life or career advice?
Two things. One, like this is what you make of it. Like if you want to do this full time, you really enjoy it, like you can. You know, timing's everything as far as getting the full time position, but you can do it. Or if you want to be a part timer, traditional member, and go forth and prosper in the civilian world, like you can do that. But whatever you want to do, or whatever you want the military to be to you, you can make it. And I think there's enough people on this base that support that. Like we do a good job of maybe this job isn't right for you. Have you considered this other career field within the 122nd? And I think there's a spot for everybody, bottom line. And you get out of it what you put into it. When I was, I think I was probably 19 years old, so maybe a senior airman. We had a new wing commander come in St. Louis. And his three things were family, flying, fitness. Like, that was it. He's like, family's first. Always first until it isn't, right? Maybe family isn't first when we go deploy. Like, you got to put family on the back burner. So up until those points, kind of like Deuce said, like, family needs to be number one. Take care of them, because there's going to be a time where you need to go away. And that's okay. That's what you signed up for. And you need to do that, because that's why we wear the uniform. Flying is like our thing. That's what we need to be good at. Again, that's every AFSC on the base for that airplane, not the pilot, that airplane. And then fitness, they always, you know, it's funny how much has changed in 20 years, right? Like, you probably didn't even have an email address when you first got in the military. No. I didn't either. No. Like, so you talk about flyers. Now we're doing, yeah, I got exactly. An email address as an airman. I'm like, well, this is cool. And now we're doing podcasts, which is crazy. But like, things change. And same in the fitness side of it. So the family find fitness, they always preached, pass your fitness test. It's like, okay, that's a given now, right? That's black and white. Just do your test, pass it. Don't care. But it's mental fitness. And that's the other shift that we've made over the 20 years. Nobody ever talked mental fitness. And you got to have it. And your family needs to have it. Like, it all kind of ties together. Like, you have got to be mentally fit if you're going to go fight, especially this next one. Because it is going to be big. And you got to be ready.
What ways have you found to take care of yourself that way mentally?
Good friends, really, is what I think is a strong one. And fortunately, I work with my best friends, right? People ask me, you have any friends outside of work? Like, I have a couple. I don't remember their names, but they're nice people, right? Yeah, no, I
do. Sure, don't give me wrong. To them.
I'm going to say this exactly to them.
Here's your shout out,
but
buddy.
No, I think having good friends, good relationships, and good people that you trust, and really, you can be honest with and bounce things off of. And if you're suffering, like, we have the people on base that can support for that also.
You say the guard's a family, and we truly are. Like, I've known Tug 20-plus years, like, and Jess and Sarah and Amelia and Jackson, their freaking dog. Like, we know each other well. Like, we get along, and we have that. And I think that family part is what keeps you sane. You have to have those friends, you have to have those people, and you have to give them the time that they deserve and give them the opportunity to look out for you while you're looking out for them.
Yeah.
And we do. Like I said, I've never had a little brother, and I don't know if I want one. But for better or worse, Tug's been that guy for 20 years. And I had big brothers, like the guys that helped me along. So
yeah,
it truly is a family affair, and that makes a big difference, and it keeps you sane in the tough times.
And we know, like, you can go by and be like, all right, dude, what's up? Like, there's something on your mind.
Yeah.
It's usually just frustration about whatever, but like, meaningless. But it's like, all right, lay it on me. What's going on?
I don't know that you have that everywhere else. Like, right. I've never had a real job where I wore a suit and tie to work. I've always worn pajamas. but I just don't know that you have that in the corporate world. And we definitely have it
right here
at the 122nd.
Yeah, Colonel Boatwright's going to have to find a new boss to complain about to his wife now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he'll find someone.
There's a lot of people to complain about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Colonel Wagner, did you...
he's easy to complain about.
Poor Hoop.
Did you have anything you wanted to add on for advice?
No, I mean, I guess my advice would be take risks. So take smart risks, take risks that are relevant to your position, take risks to ask the questions that you don't know if you should or not, take risks to volunteer for something that you don't think you'll be like accepted for, take risks for growth, take risks to work ahead in your CDCs, you know, like do better and be willing to take that risk. The worst thing you can do is just set back and let things come to you. So take risks to grow, and then you'll benefit. The people around you will benefit. The wing will benefit. And that's what we need. We need people, you know, punching above their weight class. And you do that by taking those risks. And the other thing would be to stay positive. Last time we talked about the Beatles and Operation Ivy and some of the songs that that kind of helped guide and direct me. Tug mentioned that he was like, what, brother, sister, brother, right? You were the youngest of three with your sister in the middle. Well, I'm the same, but I'm girl, boy, girl. So I was the middle kid, and I had two sisters and one TV in my house. So I spent a lot of time watching stuff that I didn't really want to on a rainy day. But one of the ones that they watched all the time was Annie, like the 1980s like musical Annie. And that was a kid that had a terrible situation, but she had a positive spin on all of it. So if you're a cynic or a skeptic or anywhere in between, like, keep that positive attitude and you can accomplish a lot of things. And that, I mean, I learned that when I was just a little kid watching those movies with my sisters. And that's something I'm carried through. It doesn't matter what's going on around you. You control how you react to it.
Yeah.
And if you stay positive, you're going to see better results than if you let things drag you down.
Yeah.
So, I would say just that, like, regardless of the situation, the challenges you're facing, the unknown stuff that's going on in the Air Force at the 122nd or anything else, any place else you find yourself throughout your career, just stay positive and you can expect good outcomes.
Well, I think you see what you want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you want to dwell on the negative, yeah. It's easy. It's everywhere. It's easy to find the negative things. It's actually harder to be positive
right. In
a lot of environments.
The but news will help.
The sun will come out tomorrow. You know what I mean? It'll be okay. Just stay positive.
Thank you both for your time today. NEI for allowing us to use this amazing booth. We're actually not at the base. We're doing a little community visit, and it's been awesome. Thank you both again for sharing your message, vision, the career milestones, some of your stories with all of us. I feel like this show is a way that each person can leave their legacy and support the community that we get to serve so proudly in. We do not want to be a hidden secret. Black Snakes, back to you to respond. Like, subscribe, leave a review, and share the show. We want this to be the fastest growing military podcast out there, and it's because of people like you. So post on social media. Let's leave an impact. Colonel Wagner, will you do us the third time honor one last time?
Absolutely. Storm hell.
This is the official podcast of the 122nd Fighter Wing. Views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the 122nd Fighter Wing, Air National Guard, or United States government. No endorsement of any person or business is ever intended.